Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. I welcome Katrina Vandenhoevel, the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine, also the Washington Post columnist. And a year ago, May of 2022, Katrina posted, "We Need a Real Debate About the Ukraine War," in which she explored the orthodox and unorthodox thinking in the early days of the conflict. Well, we're in the second year of war now, and that debate has not yet taken place. And the question is, will it, or are we looking at something that will never be discussed in open, and that the posturing will continue from Moscow, from Washington, from Kyiv, from other capitals in Europe? Very good evening to you, Katrina. Your column of a year ago is strikingly prescient. We need a debate. I'm not going to ask why that hasn't happened. I will ask, what would the debate look like in your imagination here in 2023? Good evening.
Good evening, John. The debate would look at the situation on the ground, where the National Security Council spokesman today spoke of at least 100,000 Russian fighters have been killed or wounded in Ukraine in the past 5 months. And recent leaked documents, while estimating casualties is notoriously difficult, estimate that Ukraine has suffered 131 casualties, up to 1,700 killed in action. I think there's a weariness, a war fatigue to both sides, which is documented in some of the news coverage, but it's real. And you see it even in polls one can't necessarily trust, but Levada in Russia is the most trusted. And numbers of supporters, while still glued to state TV, are diminishing, as is the case very slightly in Ukraine, though the country has understandably been unified, as Anatole Levin reported at thenation.com last week, by a surge of, you know, ethnic nationalism. But there's a weariness. There's a weariness that also has been revealed. Again, I mentioned the leaked documents, that those in Washington may not be speaking, but there seems to be a waiting for the spring offensive, and we're now at May 1, to be the sort of case where the weapons that have come in, many weapons, though Ukrainians seek more air defense weapons, will make a difference, and that you can see a spring offensive, Ukrainian spring offensive, lead to more morale and hope. It's not clear that will be the case. It's not clear when the spring offensive will start, John. There has been reporting about a true enemy of soldiers, the viscous mud that remains. So I would wish for more discussion of how a ceasefire would look and mobilization in this debate of institutions that could monitor that ceasefire. No one trusts Putin. Trust but verify is something Gorbachev used to say. So that's where I think, and facts on the ground, last thing, John, is, as you know, we are witnessing the vast majority of nations in this world voting to condemn the Russian invasion, but also choosing to remain neutral in the conflict. So playing some role, Brazil, Turkey, South Africa, in trying to scope out an alternative. Certainly China has been a key player. You can dismiss the 12-point peace plan, but it's there. And China will be something to reckon with as we move forward.
Yes, both Brazil and China have leaders who have spoken of peace. Now, China actually applied that rhetoric into the Middle East, so there's a reason to believe it could do it again. Brazil was also of interest recently because Lula da Silva, the newly elected, although he has been president before, president, went on a tour, not just to Beijing, but also to Europe, speaking of peace. In other words, the arbiters are present. They can be called upon. And why they are not being called upon is a puzzle. So I present it this way from your column a year ago. You could not be certain a year ago what the purpose of the United States was or will be in the Ukraine war. You suggest it might be possible that the ambition for the Biden people in May of 22 was to weaken Russia. Is that still the possibility of why they're fighting on? Weaken Russia?
Yeah, yes, but John, I think any clear, cold-eyed person would understand that we've seen Russia's failures quite vividly in the poor recruiting, the poor nature of the army, the corruption, the failure, the blunder, the great strategic blunder Putin made, if one believes the commentary out of Russia, that he saw it as a few days, a week. Russia's been exposed as a weak power. China, the reverse, has gained from this war. But I think what we may be looking at, the danger here, is a broader conflict if we don't find a negotiated settlement. We are now looking at Ukraine moving toward Crimea. There's discussion by our neocons of taking back Crimea. This has been a province between Ukraine and Russia. I think what we've seen drones there in the last few days, John, as you know. I think what we may see is more and more the danger of Ukrainian leaders wanting to get the U.S. and NATO directly involved in the fight against Russia, which Biden has resisted.
There's the question you asked a year ago. Is this a war between NATO and Russia? Is that what we're witnessing?
I believe so. How can it not be? Because Ukraine demands and depends on the weapons that they're receiving from NATO, from the United States. And that's a kind of proxy war. And the danger of more and more weapons. The problem is there is a kind of conceit, a trope, that Ukraine has to get stronger and stronger before it comes to any table. Maybe it's not a table, it's a ceasefire, which is different. But the more this war goes on, the more refugees, the more ravaging of Ukraine, and the further away from a democratic sovereign country if a negotiation was done with the toughness that we would see. So I think all of these peace prospects should be welcomed. However, I think what you're seeing in Washington, John, and I alluded to it last year, see an elite waiting, literally waiting for this so-called spring offensive before they will take a next step. How many more men, women die for, you know, this war, which you're right that there is an instinct to want to defeat weak in Russia. But the conflagration, we haven't even mentioned escalation, inadvertent escalation of nuclear, tactical, other, is so dangerous that the more this war goes on, the more dangerous in that sense.
We have a minute, Katrina. You're very articulate and well-informed of people who were once associated with the anti-war left in this country and our youth. Are they speaking out now? Are they whispering? Where are they, the anti-war? We have about...
So it's the anti-war... TheNation.com, I think, has been a sensible voice. The Quincy Institute, in its own way, the Nation... the American Committee for U.S.-Russia Accord. It is a very tough issue, but above all, one doesn't make a brief for any of the forces, but for a peace that will allow Ukraine a way forward. But it's a transpartisan voice right now, this opposition to war. And if a broader conflict is to be avoided, there's going to need to be a negotiated settlement, maybe ungainly, but it's going to reflect the reality. And I think that's where realists at this moment are more in sync with the times to end this war.
A year from now, will we be discussing your column of 2022 again, asking where it is? We just have a few seconds.
I don't believe so. I think that we're going to see motion and movement very quickly.
Katrina Vandenhove, The Washington Post editorials from May 24th, 2022, to look it up. Hard questions not yet answered. She's the publisher of The Nation magazine. I'm John Powell.